Okay, not that there's any introductions required, but just to do so once again, we have Dr. Dawson, who is our Global Director of Research, who obviously chaired this morning's meeting. And we have Dr. Ronan Power, who just received the Medal of Excellence. Dr. Pierce Lyons, who of course is the President and Founder of Alltech. And Mark Lyons, Dr. Mark Lyons, who is our Global Director of Projects and is responsible specifically for the biorefinery. As you heard today, we obviously have the opportunity here for you to ask questions. We're hoping for some good questions. And if I could just ask you to keep them reasonably short. Obviously, the purpose of this is to try to maximize the opportunity for these gentlemen to share with us some of their ideas. So, anybody like to go first? Journalists without questions. This has got to be a first. David, thank you very much.
Dr. Lyons, you talked about the greenest generation for your session this morning. What is Alltech actually doing to embrace this whole green image?
That's an excellent question, David. Wouldn't expect anything but an excellent and probing question from you. We're trying to embrace it in every way that we can. So, for example, in what may seem to be a relatively mundane aspect of it, when it came to the Alltech World Equestrian Games, we're trying to do as many green things as we can there, pertaining to solar panels, pertaining to the literature that's used, the writing pads that's used, and making sure that's recycled. So on one hand, we're doing that aspect. The other aspect of it is, of course, this whole carbon credits, and you will hear later on, in fact, about nitrogen credits, and we don't tend to talk about nitrogen credits. And yet nitrous oxide is about 200 to 300 times worse than carbon dioxide. And so we're addressing carbon dioxide through the algae and carbon dioxide through limiting the emission of carbon dioxide. We're addressing nitrous oxide because we're saying, hey, we cannot afford to waste nitrogen onto farms, and therefore our technology, both now and in the future, has to be addressed towards minimizing nitrogen waste. You know in Europe that there are very strict rules now pertaining to the discharge of nitrogen. We believe, in fact, that if we could just get across the wall, I call it a wall, and if we could just get across that wall to the decision makers and explain to these guys on the other side of the wall, the owners of the company, the decision makers, not necessarily the researchers, that guys, we truly can give you things which are green, things which will reduce carbon waste, nitrogen waste. Oh, and by the way, it's not going to compromise your productivity one iota. And a businessman to a businessman, and a business to a business, and putting your money where your mouth is and so forth, that we can do that. I think there's two things. One, we have to continue education our people, and I don't mean our young people. I mean the people who make the decisions that this green technology, not this tree-hugger technology, but that this green technology is real.
Can I ask that we put that also to Dr. Dawson? I know your talk on Wednesday is going to refer to some of this. Perhaps you could give us some insight into what you're going to say.
Yeah, and I would throw up in front, if you look at Alltech's history, it is truly a history of natural products and natural solutions. So I think it's embedded in our culture to be involved with this kind of issue. One of the things we're going to do on Wednesday, we're going to talk a little bit about technologies that the animal industry, animal agriculture, can use to address the greening issues. And if you just look at emissions alone, the problems that are associated with gaseous emissions, the greenhouse gas problem, there are a number of things that can happen in the livestock industry, animal industry, that will change that considerably. And if you do some of the calculations, just looking at what we know about changing efficiency incorporating some of this algal growth, algae technology into the overall production system, changing simply the way we manage manure in the system, we can actually cause about a 10% decrease in the overall greenhouse emissions. Now, that's considerable when you start thinking about what the overall complaint is against the livestock industry, which is probably only providing or contributing somewhere around 12 to 13% of the greenhouse gases overall. So we have a tremendous possibility. And then if you go to some of the algae technology we're talking about and reviewing right now, not only do you have green fuel production, but you actually have green animal production by including that into animal diets and animal systems. So there's a tremendous potential there, and those are things that we can start quantitating and putting in place. Efficiency, health, all contribute to that green issue, and I think the way we're approaching it really will allow some of that to happen.
Very good. Stephen, are you?
Stephen Cadogan from Ireland. I was thrilled to hear about the progress on Alzheimer's disease, but not having much of a knowledge of medicine, I would hate to give people false expectations. And could we get some perspective from the speakers on how the Altec's involvement, where it fits into the perspective of Alzheimer's disease research, please?
Ronan?
I've always been very interested in the human health, the possibility of using some of our products for human health applications. That's my background. My initial training was in breast cancer research. I was intrigued when we started to do these studies on selenium in particular in animals, in laboratory animal models. And we actually looked at the brain of those animals. And we saw gene expression profiles, or if you like, gene activity profiles, which struck us as being of potential immense importance if those same changes could be brought about in a human brain. So I'm talking about effects such as decreased deposition of the protein that causes the plaques that are such a trademark of Alzheimer's disease. We saw decreases in enzyme systems that are associated with actually snipping up those proteins and causing them to coalesce together to form those sticky plaques and the other, if you like, hallmark of Alzheimer's disease, which are things called neurofibrillary tangles, or NFTs. So we saw decreases in the biological pathways, decreases in the activity of those pathways that indicated that in these mice, in the brains of these mice receiving certain forms of selenium, that there were concomitant decreases in those dangerous proteins. Because you're altering gene activity, you're altering the production of those proteins. We saw decreased gene expression activity. That implies decreased production of these proteins. So it's an area of extreme interest to us. I'm not sure if we're ever going to pursue it fully from, if you like, launching a new line of drugs based on selenium. I don't think so. We're not talking about that. We're talking about the beneficial impact of nutrition on gene expression profiles and the potential of using nutrition to boost human health, to improve animal health. We would foresee that if an individual started taking certain supplements early enough in life, then they would have a pretty good chance of maybe reducing their risk of developing these diseases later on. It's well known that Alzheimer's is caused by oxidative stress and the products of oxidative stress. We're seeing effects which clearly indicate that we have reduced levels of oxidative stress and DNA damage in brain tissue in response to a number of our supplements. And I think that not alone applies to humans, it applies to animals. Because if you can reduce oxidative stress and associated DNA damage in animal tissues, then you're increasing things like longevity and productivity as a result.
Right.
Aidan, if I can add to that, because I think Steve makes an excellent point that we have to be terribly careful that we don't raise false hopes. On the other hand, we equally have to be terribly careful that we don't put down hopes. And in our discussions with some very respected Alzheimer's researchers, the tragedy is that there isn't a cure, and we're not suggesting that we have one. And the tragedy is, according to them, that some of the drugs which are on the market today do not cure, do not even stop. And I guess what Rona's work, the gene work, is showing is that, you know, perhaps there is something, if taken early enough, we can in fact improve, as you put it, the oxidative stress, but there is some hope at the end of the day. And, you know, if we think for one moment that we're always going to have a home run, hit something for six, that's not the way science works. Science works on enthusiasm, and scientists work on enthusiasm. And if you can get scientists enthusiastic, they will move mountains. And in the case of Ronan, for example, and I do not certainly put myself on the same level as scientists, as we share PhDs, and that's about the end of it. You know, they've taken their PhDs and gone so much further. However, when Ronan explained to me the possibilities for the gene work, and the possibilities not just for Alzheimer's, but for all sorts of things, I was excited enough to say, okay, we'll do it. And he was asking for $1.5 million to go and do some work in Wisconsin. And we said, okay, we'll do it. We'll make the money available. Let's do it. It's that enthusiasm that we need to have. And if sometimes it comes across that we're so enthusiastic that we're almost claiming things which aren't claimable, then I apologize. But a lot of it, I think, comes from the enthusiasm. And without that enthusiasm, you will not get young people into any of these things.
Lady down here. Could you just tell us who you are also?
Yeah. Good morning. My name is Yasna Villaira. I'm from Chile, from Aqua Magazine. How could Alltech contribute to global feeding and human well-being, Mr. Lyons?
Well, first of all, it's interesting you're with an Aqua magazine, and so I'll try and reference some of my comments towards the Aqua side. One of the big difficulties, of course, with the Aqua side is water and water quality. And one of the great difficulties of the world, in fact, is that we're running short of water. And so a lot of our efforts on the Aquaculture Center and so forth has been to do with recycling of water and making sure that, in fact, in our case, for example, on land-based aquaculture, that we have 10 to 15% makeup water, and the 10 to 15% comes from the fact that through evaporation we're losing water. So that is a big interest of ours on the aqua side. Equally, pertaining to the food aspect of the aqua side, you know, we're running out of fish, and we're running out of fish meal. And some might say that we ought to have a ban on the use of fish meal, because it seems like we're going further and further down the food chain and destroying more and more layers. What Alltech can do is stop and say, hey, perhaps through fermentation we can produce some of these proteins. And you know, the oil companies are not all bad. In fact, they've done some tremendous research. And we only have to go back to the protein product of the 60s and 70s, where oil, believe it or not, was so cheap that we were going to re-ferment it and make a protein. And that protein was going to be called protein. And the ICIs, and who are not an oil company, I appreciate, but they teamed up with the oil companies to make something like that. So the image, the idea was there. Our idea, in fact, is to take sugar. I don't mean corn sugar. I mean sugar residues perhaps left over from sugarcane processing. And take that sugar and convert it into biomass. Take the fiber, for example, like bagasse down in Brazil. What do they do with bagasse? They burn it. It's fiber. They don't know how to do anything else with it. So if we can learn how to use that bagasse, and we already know how to use the sugar, convert the sugar into protein, and with the bagasse, that's an incredible step forward. Keep in the back of your mind that if you take a ton of grains, you will get 100 units of energy out of that, whether that energy is for biofuels or whether that energy is for an animal. If you take a ton of fiber, theoretically, you will get 70 units of energy. And we have no end of fiber, with 1 billion tons of fiber in the United States each and every year. And you have a corresponding number in Chile. And taking that fiber and breaking that fiber into energy, if it can be done, and the technology is not there today, and don't let anybody kid you, the technology is not there. But if you can get that fiber and focus our scientists on breaking down that fiber, there's your solution to alternative raw materials for our animals, and there's your solution to leaving the 350 million tons of corn that we produce in the United States for humans. So it's fiber. It's very clear in my mind. It's fiber that we have to focus on. And that's the nature of the solid-state fermentation, which is fundamentally saying to a fungus, break down the fiber. So there are proteins out there which can replace fish meal, and there are fiber sources that in due course, in the passage of time, would be able to use as corn substitutes. But this corn-soya model may not be sustainable.
Okay, next question. Yes.
I'm Owen Roberts from Canada, and it's really a big country, so could I have two questions?
Two short questions.
Thank you. First question for Dr. Power. Could you perhaps comment on opportunities for collaboration with other universities, other research institutions for the new center? And I also had a question for the other Dr. Lyons. We started having a conversation last night about the complexities of communicating this whole area of green technology. And could you maybe share what we were talking about last night? Because I think journalists and communicators in the group would be interested in hearing that. So thank you,
Dr. Power first.
I think we're always interested in collaborations. In fact, we've had a number of collaborations in the past in the area of nutrigenomics. In saying that, however, we have a very defined and set program of items we wish to address over the next year to 18 months. While we were building our center, we were doing our trial work, we were banking, if you like, tissue samples. All of those have to be processed. We've got 20, 25 different experiments lined up that we immediately want to process through that facility. And processing the experiments is the easy part, as I tried to explain in my presentation this morning. It's really actually taking the data that you generate from such experiments and be able to sift through the tens of thousands of data points to actually find identify the pathways that are being affected. So the bioinformatics component of this whole process is quite complicated and time-consuming. But the short answer to your question is yes, we like to collaborate, and we also have a very full plate at the moment in terms of our research goals and strategies in this area.
Okay, second question for the other Dr. Lyons.
Still haven't gotten used to that. Yes, in terms of communication, I think some of the things that we were discussing, we were talking about how Alltech's position has changed and how, in a sense, through the Alltech FEI World Equestrian Games, we're suddenly in a different position than we were. And in reference to the wall, as it were, that sometimes we challenge our salespeople with, saying they need to get over this wall and get to the real decision makers in terms of our customers. It's the same wall, I think, in terms of political leaders. And I think if there's anything, we've now gotten ourselves in a position that we can get over that wall. You could see that by having the governor here today. We've had several senators' offices sending representatives to this event as well. And so we're now able to get through that, and I think that allows us to take the science and the knowledge we have and really present some of these facts so that a well-thought-through strategy can be put in place. I think we all respect what President Bush did in terms of pushing innovation and pushing this biofuels idea, but it could have been better thought through. And it's through the science and through the ideas we have, such as the biorefinery, that I think we can talk to those leaders and explain to them, and that's essentially what happened on Friday when we got this grant and that support. And I think for us personally, it's something, it is all tech naturally, it is something that we believe in. This is core to our business. And that's really where we're seeing this as a challenge. We have an opportunity. We have to take it as a personal challenge to make sure that these things are communicated to those leaders.
Okay, Nigel, at the back there, please. Then that's Greg.
Question for Pierce. I thought your analogy to a wall early on was very appropriate because the largest wall in the world is in China. Are you doing anything to help the Chinese become a little greener?
I don't know how many Chinese journalists we have here. We are working diligently with the Chinese. In fact, we had up to very recently one of our three bioscience centers, Nigel, was in China. And some of the breakthroughs we made were with Chinese scientists. China has immense problems to feed her people, 1.3 billion. And China is hungry for technology. And there are a few countries that I go to that are more embracive of new changes than China. Show them something, and in fact, they will move. So specifically, for example, we are working with China on what we call our dairy program. When the previous governor of Kentucky, Dr. Fletcher, went to China, they presented him with one or two or three problems. The first problem was, of course, traceability. They said, can you help us with traceability? Well, it so happens that the state of Kentucky has got one of the finest regulatory systems going. And so to take that traceability and transfer it over to China. I mean, the previous administrator of the FDA likened the Chinese regulatory system today to where the United States was in 1912 and 1913, prior to the establishment of the FDA. So we are working and encouraging and so forth and trying, and our regulatory director, Dr. Steve Traylor, has already been over there. And prior to him joining us, he was the director of the regulatory body for the state of Kentucky. So we're doing that. On the other hand, we're also encouraging them and working diligently with them to show them how they can improve productivity and at the same time reduce pollution. And we're pushing an open door, quite frankly. We are pushing an open door. There is a bigger problem. And the bigger problem is that we have relegated and delegated so much of our food production to China. And don't find, not that I'm suggesting you do, you are, but don't, let's not find the Chinese at fault for something which is perhaps our fault. You know, why is it that the United States imports $1 billion worth of fish every month? That's extraordinary. I've spoken to people involved with soybean associations and corn and so forth. They say, well, we can't do it as cheap as them. Well, that's crazy. Of course we can do it as cheap as them. We have the raw materials. They don't. So it's a question of getting excited about us doing it again. Vitamins. Why is it that virtually all the vitamins are coming from China? And I don't see that as a bad on China. I see a bad on us. And yet when I talk to some of our associations and some of our users of vitamins, they say, well, they're the best at it. Well, let me remind them, we used to be the best at it. And we've allowed that technology to go overseas. So with regard to China, we work hand in glove with them. It's an excellent market for us. It's a growing market for us. We do conduct research over there at the same time. We would rather like to bring some of that technology back to Europe and America and, again, as part of that revolution back into science, start doing some of it ourselves. But they're open.
Okay, next question. Greg, just before, congratulations, by the way, on bringing five of your people to this meeting. I think this is the first time ever from Watt Publications. So, Greg Watt, please.
Thank you. This morning you spoke a lot about connecting the supply chain, all the various parties. And one of the most significant is the large retail on the food side, Tesco and Walmart specifically. What can the animal feed industry, what maybe more specifically, what can Alltech do to bring in that significant stakeholder who really is very much in control of food distribution and feeding the world?
Yeah, that's an excellent question. And a few years ago, we had a representative, Aidan, if you remember, from McDonald's. And he was blown away, frankly, by what it was that we were trying to do. And for my sins, for right or for wrong, mainly for wrong, I was in Harvard. Incidentally, I've never gone to Harvard, never wanted to go to Harvard. Or come to think of it, was never accepted to go to Harvard. But I was in Harvard because, much to my amazement, they have a case study on Alltech. And as part of the grilling, because they didn't really know I was in the audience, and these guys were saying where Alltech should go, etc. Should it go to the food side? Should it go to the feed side? Etc., etc. And two people, including one from McDonald's, stood up because they were at the program. They said, what the food industry needs to do is embrace the Alltechs of this world on traceability. So there's an invitation for our industry to actually get involved with the food side. But you know what? We don't do it. And you know what? We try to promote and we defend the indefensible. We defend the indefensible. And the indefensible may be antibiotics when they are totally against it. Well, let's embrace them and say, hey, we're not going to do it. The indefensible may be some, as they see it, not as I see it, may be the way perhaps that we raise our animals. But you know what? They have told us, and Tesco is a good example, they have told us that if they really understood what was going on, they are as much into branding as we are, and that they are willing to pay. And the consumer, in turn, is willing to pay. And we see this in the organic, the natural food chains that we have here in the United States, which is still a small percentage. But these people are willing to pay, and there's a market there that's willing to pay. But to do so, we have to educate. And the mantra of Alltech has always been marketing through education. I think we need to have a meeting like this, but we have to have it for the food industry. And I think why is it that our children, when they learn about animals and animal production, where do they learn about it? They learn about it from PETA. They don't learn about it from us. We don't put any money into bridging that gap. And I know in Southern Ireland, we had a young journalist came to us a few years ago. David, you came with you. And they had this booklet about how dairy cows are raised and how pigs are raised and so forth. We don't do that. If you want to see a good job of people embracing the food chain, go to Indiana. I think it's called Fair Oaks. And as you go to Fair Oaks, they have almost like a Disney World. And as you go into this Disney World, there's like a Miss Piggy, except she's a Miss Cowie. And she's up there on her trapeze and she's talking to you and she's saying things like, well, I'm sure glad that you're here today because you're coming into my home and I have my own vetted and veterinarian. And she stumbles over it like that. But that's what we have to do. We have to educate people. And we have to educate people that we're not all growth hormones and antibiotics and confined animals. But you know what? I don't think we do that.
Right, next question, please.
Thank you, Aidan. Jamie O'Reilly from Ireland. I know there's a bit of an Irish takeover here at this press conference, forgive us. Pierce, I spoke to you in Dublin in January. We talked about the increase in feed prices. And I suppose, get the panel's opinion. I don't think you have the answer as to food prices and feed prices have increased over the last number of months and continuing to rise. And now, even in first world countries in Europe, in Ireland and the UK, consumers are getting very worried about the price of their shopping basket going up. Do you have an idea, I suppose, from what you know, as to when we're going to see this levelling off, or how long more will this increase in feed and food prices continue for?
Carl?
It's obviously an easy question.
Yeah, if we could answer that one, I think I'd go invest more in the stock market right now. No, I don't know if we can really answer that question. A lot of that's being driven by simply fuel prices, and that's going to be the question in the long run that you're going to have to address. I don't foresee that that's changing immediately. I'm not an economics person, but I don't see that that's changing that rapidly.
Go back to the wall. You go back to the man who has to pay the bills, the owner. We had some nutritionists come in to see us, and they had a particular type of animal, it doesn't really matter. And they said, if you tell me that we can save more than 5 cents per animal, we don't believe you. We don't believe you. And we want to know where your university data is, and on and on and on. And I showed them Ronan's, or Dr. Sarai's, 974 pages. And I said, well, go read that. He said, but I don't believe you. And there's the problem. They don't believe us. I've talked to many, many feed companies, and I said, let's set the program out. How many tons of feed you're making? I'm making 100,000 tons a year. I'm making 100,000 tons a month. Now let's set ourselves a target. And that's how a businessman does it. We have to improve our EBITDA. We have to improve the bottom line. And now we say, how can we save 10%? Well, I can tell you that the stuff where I put my money, ill-spent or otherwise, with this guy for his... I'm just doing this in his hair because I used to have hair like that too. But, you know, on Mark's PhD and so forth on SSF, we can save $25 a ton. Well, $25 a ton, in my humble brain, is 100,000 tons. There's 2.5 million. But you know who's going to... that's going to resonate with the owner of the company. And then we take something like Cellplex, and there's 974 pages say that you will save 15 cents per bird by focusing on its health. And that's what Ronan was talking about. So I don't think we can do anything with regard to the price of corn, but by gosh, we can do something with regard to efficiency. By gosh, we can do something with regard to the waste of nitrogen that we still have. You know, I give the example sometimes of a chick, and it's ironic, I see Governor Brown, Mr. Kentucky Fried Chicken, has just come in. But Governor, a chick spends one-third of its life in the egg and two-thirds of its life outside of the egg. And I don't know if he's speaking at this year's symposium, but Steve Leeson from the University of Guelph says, if we look after that chick for the first 4 days of its life, when it's just emerged from the egg, when it's just emerged from having yolk and other sort of proteins, we can save, I'm trying to remember, Simon, do you remember what the figure was? The bird goes to market 2 days earlier. I know what it was. The bird was 34% heavier at 7 days. And the bird was 9% heavier, same food. The bird was 9% heavier, or some food efficiency, heavier at market weight. It's the wall. We got to get that information. I'm sure if the poultry companies of this world, the owners of the poultry companies of this world, the poultry companies of the world knew that, they could have a bird which is 9% heavier simply by feeding something, and I'm not talking Alltech stuff, but feeding something for the first 7 days, by gosh, they'd say, go do it. We've got to get the owners involved, because they are involved, they're writing the checks, and we have to make sure the wall, which tends to be many nutritionists, doesn't block us.
Just for your information, Dr. Leeson will be speaking on that subject tomorrow morning in the poultry session. So, who's next?
Richard Halloran, Ireland. Dr. Lyons.
Which one?
Well, both of you. Both of you. You've both said in a way that science works. Now, and I'm speaking now from a European context, when it suits the real decision makers in Europe, the European Commission, science goes out the window. We're not allowed GM, gene manipulation, no to that. We never had the likes of RBST. So how do you get around that problem? How does science overcome these issues? Because when it does genuinely suit the real decision makers, yeah, you're not getting your message through.
You know, you're spot on. The Wall Street Journal last week said that we needed a White House. We need a science White House. What they were saying was they needed scientists in the White House. And the quotation I used this morning from the two Nobel Prize winners pertained to that. Our politicians don't understand science. Is that their fault or is that our fault? That's our fault. They are what they are. You can't change that. But you know, when you embrace them and you talk to them, they in fact are as willing as any group that I have met to open and to do something. We decided about a year ago that we would take on somebody who knew something about the political arena, because I certainly don't know anything about it. And what that has done is made the politicians, I talk about the United States, aware of what we are doing. And one of the salient facts and the salient, one of the responses which has come from that was last Friday when we got $30 million. It behooves us to educate them. Now, be careful. If we go to the European Union and we start preaching to them, and this, you get one chance to make a first impression, and you go in there and you want to talk about growth hormones and ear implants to the EU, you are certainly not going to push on an open door. And if you go to the EU and you start talking about GMO, you are certainly not pushing an open door. That doesn't mean that you couldn't convince them in due course to go that route. The problem with GMO is not GMO. It's the way it was presented. You know, today's day and age, we need more corn. We need more raw materials. We need more food. Now, there's a cause, and there's a requirement. And you have a science and a technology which will do that. Then you sell it to them. They will buy it. But if you foist it upon them and push it upon them, remember, they're non-scientists. They're going to listen to what the consumer says, and you're going to get a closed door. It's somewhat ironic, is it not? If, God forbid, you and I start suffering from cancer or some disease, we'll take every GMO that comes along to try and save ourselves. And that's education versus non-education. I think we have to do a better job of educating. And I think you'll find that they'll respond. I don't know how you feel, Mark.
I was just going to say, I think it's also about being comfortable. And unfortunately, in Europe, we've gotten comfortable. And we have this Young Animal Scientist Award. And there's our largest market. We had 10% of the people applying in Europe who applied in Latin America. And why is that? It's because innovation, it's because there's a hunger. And I think in Europe there needs to be a hunger for science and a trust in science. Unfortunately, there's been a lot of trust lost in science. And it does come back to that education, but it also comes back to keeping it simple. And that's one thing we've really been working on, and taking our concepts and working through, even in the local community, having a program called Science Made Simple, where we have different ideas presented to the entire community. I think it's things like that, reaching out on all levels, and that builds this groundswell and brings these ideas to these politicians, because that's ultimately, I mean, their boss is the people. And if the people want it, they'll push it through.
Okay. Gentleman from Argentina.
Morning. My name is Luis Marcenaro, de Argentina, but no speaking English. Hago la pregunta en español para Mark y puedes contestar o trasladar. Yo quisiera saber sobre la fermentación en seco de biomasa no grano, cuáles son, a criterio de Oltec, las posibilidades reales de que reemplace de manera significativa la utilización de los granos, en cuánto tiempo eso podría pasar y qué condiciones deberían darse.
Okay, so Mark, yeah, I think if we could just translate, he's obviously asking about biomass fermentation.
Basically, if you had a biomass fermentation, potentially a solid-state fermentation, converting this material into a useful protein source or a useful source for animal feed.
The real question, I think, as I understood it, is how real is that?
Yeah,
how
is that
realistic is that technology?
Bueno, la idea de fermentación sólida es tomar algo, un producto que tiene un nivel muy alto en fibra, y en nuestra fermentación podemos convertir eso y subir bastante el nivel de proteínas. Y creemos que este puede ser, no solamente en un nicho como lo tenemos hoy, pero realmente ser un parte de varios procesos, si sería los granos que salen de una planta de etanol, si sería el bagazo, estamos viendo en Brasil la posibilidad de hacer una fermentación después con el bagazo, que es el desecho de la cana de azúcar. Y creemos que esta es una gran posibilidad. La fermentación cada vez es mejor, más eficiente, bajamos los costos. La planta en México es todo manual. La planta que vamos a construir aquí es totalmente automatizado. Y lógico, este abre muchas posibilidades. Y creo que va a ser siempre, o puede ser, un sistema que va junto con otra industria. Que ellos tienen un subproducto, byproduct, y podemos agregar este valor. So basically the idea being that through solid state fermentation we believe that we can take a number of high fiber materials and increase the levels of protein, add value to these materials, and we think that, that there's great possibilities of that not just being a niche industry in the sense the way we have it today. We are the only SSF plant in the Americas, in Mexico. We're a very manual process. We're automating that process, and we'll be bringing it here to Kentucky. And that's something that I think we would see could go with a lot of processing. So anywhere that there was a fibrous material coming out, we believe we could put a system in, and suddenly this wouldn't be just a niche. It would be perhaps a mainstream product.
Okay, I think we're down to our last couple of questions, just in terms of time. So who else have we got? One in the front here for Gary, please.
How has the concept of the community biorefinery changed in the past year? Has it changed? If so, how has it changed and why?
That's an interesting question. Question being, if what we're going to do is what we thought we were going to do 2 or 3 years ago, it's had to change. It's had to change because 2 years ago we thought, in fact, that it would be a relatively small percentage of the raw material would be coming from fiber, and we would sort of ease into more and more fiber. With corn prices being where they are, we've had to go in much earlier. We're saying, okay, we'll do 30%. And so the pilot plant, and it's not a pilot plant, this is a commercial plant. The commercial plant will use 30% fiber. But equally, Gary, with the corn prices, because there is still a significant percentage of corn in there, we have to look to our byproducts and how do we add value to the byproducts. Because, after all, we're going to be a processor of fiber and we're going to be a processor of grains. And ADM can still be a successful processor of grains because they're making lysine and things like that, and lysine prices have gone up. So we have to have a sustainable rural community biorefinery, we have to find other uses for the raw material that we have. In the state of Kentucky, we have a number of raw materials. We've got our switchgrass, we've got our kudzu, we've got grasses. We also have a farming community, in fact, which used to be a tobacco farming community. So we have the people there who have a love for farming and so forth. So that's another asset that we have. And we have a government that, in fact, is keen to restore agricultural prosperity. So how has it changed? Well, the awareness and the realization that we are so short of milk in this area is that Mark may do his biorefinery, but very quickly, almost at the same time, we will bring dairies in. And we have farmers from Chile interested in coming in. We have farmers from South America interested in coming in. We have farmers from Ireland. We have farmers from all over interested in coming in. 2 years ago, that wasn't such a big issue. Today, it is a big issue because they can make money. And as they make money, in fact, the biorefinery becomes more viable. 2 years ago, the aquaculture part of it wasn't as prominent as it is today. Because 2 years ago, we didn't have we as Altec didn't have the realization that algae could possibly play such a major role. But it'd be amiss of me to hear today to say that we know how we're going to use the algae, because we don't. But we sure as heck know how we're going to go and do some research on the algae. And as I told my young people who are running the aquaculture center, and they said, oh, we got these tanks and we're doing this, that, and that. I said, it's fantastic. Fantastic. Incidentally, I want to see the 20,000 gallon tank of tilapia. And don't worry. Don't worry about it. You only need to have it up next week. And it's funny, you know, you'll say that to a 40-year-old and a 50-year-old, and they want to go out and shoot themselves. And you say it to the other guys, and they go out and give you a high five. We said, Carl will knows this is the case, we went looking for algae technology. And guess what? We found somebody. And this somebody had worked for 6 years on algae. And this somebody had done their master's in algae. And so we hired this very expensive person. We hired him, went out, hired him. You know where we went out to? We went out to our fermentation department, because we found we had the guy in the fermentation department, and he's 20...
How old is Kyle?
27. So, you know, the technology is there. And as you become aware of the problem and the technology, then your program changes. And your answer, the answer to your question is that it has changed. But what has not changed is the sheer excitement of getting something done. And we're floored, delighted, but floored by the endorsement that the Department of Energy has given us. And I'll tell you a funny story. Last Friday morning, I reviewed, it's Mark's project, and I'm not a father to put pressure on a son, so long as he gets it done in half the time. So he said he was going to get done.
And half the cost.
And half the cost. So I said to Mark, well, where do we stand? And so they came in with the prices. And da, da, da. So we got it. And then the question was asked Friday morning. What do you think our chances are? This is 10 o'clock Friday morning. What do you think our chances are for the DOE? Because we hadn't heard back from them. And Mark said, I think we'll get it, Dad. And Mark Hoffman, our engineer, said, I think we'll get it, Dad. I said, you're full of it. Right? So then we'll get it. And I said, they took a dollar out and they put the dollar on the table and they said, we bet you a dollar. I said, dollar? That's not a bet. I give you 20 to 1 that we don't get it. And I will take all bets up to, and I was about to say $100. And I decided $20. Enthusiasm. Around that table, we had our financial guy who wouldn't take the bet. We had our research director who wouldn't take the bet. And we had two young people. One person said, I'll take the bet, but I don't have $20, so you borrowed it from Mark. And we have Mark's $20. And so I thought nothing of it. I went back through my office. And when I went back through my office later on, I have a glass placed on my desk. And under it was two $20 bills. It's a 20 to 1 bet, and you will owe us $400 each. That afternoon at 3 o'clock, when we got the announcement, I had two Marks in my office demanding payment. My point about that whole thing is that things change, whether it be technology changing or the reality or the landscape changing. And what we have to be capable of, companies and societies and politicians, in fact, is to be capable of changing and changing quickly. And we're expected to change. That's why we're called leaders. We got to change. And we got to give that can-do attitude. But you know what? After 30 years in the United States, we are in the can-do country. We're in the country of entrepreneurs. We're in the country where people are encouraged to become rich. That doesn't happen all over the world. We're encouraged to get out and do things. And so the United States has a new mandate, has a new responsibility, and her responsibility is to stop burning up all this oil that we're burning. Her responsibility is to revigorate and regenerate our ag schools so we can truly feed the world. You know, people do still come to the United States to do PhDs in animal nutrition, Carl. I don't hear them going anywhere else. So we are still the hotbed. Let's get behind our students. Let's pay them appropriately. Let's not always try to get it right. Let's try to get it going.